Welcome to Cider Chat. It's episode 285, and this week we're finishing up on our series on Ciders Media with a little focus on this here podcast itself, Cider Chat. And I have a pretty special treat for you on that topic because I don't really have a secondary host to help me out with it other than the Talking Palms, and frankly, they are the best.
Thank you, Rhea.
You're welcome, Medlars. I really appreciate you all.
We love you too, Rhea.
Without a doubt, Mr. Quince. So you're hearing them already. We have Mr. Quince.
Hello.
Perry Pear.
Yes, it's me, Perry Pear. How are you doing? Nice to meet you.
And the Medlars.
Hello.
They are my friends, tried and true, and have been with me from the beginning of this here podcast. And we'll do, as I always do, kind of sort through the apples, if you will, that might go into this mix. And in this case, it's going to be words, because we're going to be sharing with you a feature on Cider Chat that was published by Real Brew Magazine out of Russia. It was their summer issue. They print 6 issues per year and dedicate 1 to cider. And they interviewed me for one of the features. So I'll be getting into that shortly, but first let's start with a little bit of music, bring in the intro, and get this episode rolling. Hello, my name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. If you're new to this podcast, well, welcome. This podcast, as I said, is with makers and cider enthusiasts and people worldwide. In fact, you're going to be hearing how many countries have been on Cider Chat. We have gone around the world, and yet there's still more countries to touch base with, because the beauty of the apple is that it has rolled around the world, and the thirst for the libations made out of apples and pears and all our beautiful palms, it continues to grow. So that's a little bit about what you could expect. And all the featured conversations are always a little bit into the podcast, so you could always scroll ahead if you want to, but I don't really recommend that, because we do have some news from out and about in Ciderville, and that's where we're going to be heading to next.
Walking through the orchards.
If you are lucky enough to be in Massachusetts over Labor Day weekend, and you are in the area of Leominster, Massachusetts, the birthplace of Johnny Appleseed, specifically on Saturday, September 4th, you should know that there's a free event between 10 and 5 p.m. Absolutely free. And it's going to be an experience of having artists out in the orchard. We're going to have Mark Richardson. He's a horticulturist from Tower Hill Botanic Gardens in Boylston, Massachusetts. And that's like a museum showpiece center itself. John Bunker, our revered man of apples. He's based in New England. John top worked the entire orchard there with really select grafts of trees that we thought we were losing. So that's another side story. But anyways, Mark Richardson is a horticulturist at Tower Hill, and he's going to be talking about the preservation orchard there. And it's really, really amazing, because it's one of the largest of its kind in the nation, with more than 100 pre-1900 varieties of apples. We're also going to be having Chef Paul Carenti. He's the author of The Art of Cider Making, and he's going to be talking about the history of cider in New England. And the cool thing about Paul is he was one of the original founders of Cider Days. So you always see him at Cider Days hanging out and also making trouble. You know, he does different workshops. He's just quite a guy. He's just amazing. And it's one of the first books on cider making I ever owned. It's called, again, The Art of Cider Making. We're going to have artist Jan Ruby. She's going to be leading a painting workshop for children. She's a lifelong art educator, and she currently teaches classes at Acadia Wildlife Sanctuary in East Hampton, Massachusetts. And then throughout the day, visitors are able to meet and observe plain air painters as they tour about in the orchard. There's going to be plenty of apples and fresh cider and local food trucks, and there's even going to be some live music. And my friend Jack Donahue is going to be leading a cider-making demo. And this event is being hosted by the New England Apple Association, which has been around forever, helping to support orchards and cider makers and really educating the public. And that's a really big part of this particular event, is to educate the public and take a reading of interest in apples and cider. Because truthfully, for New England, we have lobsters, but one of the other huge foodie pieces here is cider. Apples and cider. You could go to any of the states in New England and find a cider mill where you could get fresh pressed apple juice and, of course, make cider out of that. So there's a long history here, and it is really a big part of the bigger initiative, which is to build an eventual museum of apples and cider. And that's what I've been working on, and as I get that news, you know, Ciderville, you'll be some of the first people to hear it. So make sure, if you haven't subscribed yet, definitely subscribe to this here podcast. All right, little break here. We'll be back with a little bit of word from our sponsor, the Northwest Cider Association.
Dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Emily Ritchie here. I'm the director of the Northwest Cider Association, a nonprofit here to connect cider fans and Northwest cider makers. Have you heard that we have a new Northwest Cider Club? Subscribe to our club and get insider access to our Northwest cider scene. We ship quarterly boxes to your door from up to 10 different producers all in one box. We're all about the apples, and that's why our early fall release is an exploration of apples. Did you know the crabapple is the only apple native to North America? Crabapples are sweet bombs, though you may not notice because they have a really high acidity, and the high skin to flesh ratio provides good tannins and structure too. Crabapples are technically called such because their size, they're all small, and not their cultivar, since no two apple seeds are genetically alike. Think of them as their own fruit for culinary reasons, since you can't use crab apples exactly as you would larger, more familiar apples. Runcible cider is on the rocky prairie of Mosier, Oregon, with a big sky and big views across the Columbia River Gorge. They grow only cider apple varieties, with an eye to making dry, refreshing ciders, occasionally blended with the abundant fruit grown in the area. They make small, careful batches, only using the best fruit in season. We're featuring their Crab Nebula cider in this upcoming Northwest Cider Club shipment. In this cider, Runcible uses Wixen crab apples blended with Dolgo's, Crimson Gold, and Newton Pippins. It's naturally sparkled in the bottle and dry. Time is running out, though. Order by August 18th to guarantee your Northwest Cider Club box with this fall release focused on apple varieties. nwciderclub.com/podcast.
Oh my goodness, you got to love that name, Crab Nebula from Runcible Cider in Oregon. This is one of the four ciders that are part of the elevated apple varietals. And to get this box, you want to sign up by the 18th. Now, this year, episode 285 is going out on August 18th, the day that they say that you have to sign up for this box. But I do know that they always tuck away a couple extra boxes on the side. So sign up. I bet you're not too late. I bet they will get this elevated box of apple varietals to you. Again, go to nwciderclub.com/podcast. Or, as I like to say, nwciderclub.com/podcast. It's time now to go to our feature for this year, episode 285, and that is looking at the state of cider media in North America. In part one, we featured cider culture. In part two, it was Cider Craft Magazine. And in part three, it was Cider Scene. So these are the three main media news cycles that go out weekly to talk about primarily topics happening in North America. And you could go to all those episodes at the Cider Chat Podcast Archives or at your favorite podcast directory. For part four, I'm going to be talking a little bit about Cider Chat and my thoughts on cider media, but I'm going to be doing it a little bit differently. I'm actually going to be reading to you the article on Cider Chat out of Real Brew Magazine from Russia. It was just published this summer. This is a summer edition. They publish 6 issues of Real Brew per year. It is all in Russian. So if you could speak the language and read it, then you've scored. You could totally do it. And I happen to have my piece all in English. So that's going to help me. So let me begin here with talking a little bit about the magazine itself. I have a hard copy in my hands right now. As I open the pages, it's just a beautiful glossy magazine. I mean, kudos for the artwork. It's so professionally done. The inside cover on the second page, all in Russian, I see that Bill Bradshaw, his manual for cider enthusiasts, is now published in Russian. So kudos to Bill Bradshaw out of the UK. He's just an amazing photographer, amazing guy. We did have him on the podcast here, and it's really cool to see his handiwork here. I'm going to go in a couple more pages, and on page 4 and 5, we find the contents of this here special edition of Real Brew focusing on cider. On page 4, it's in Russian, and on page 5, they have the same contents all written out in English, which allows me to share what's in this special edition with you. So let's take a look. I see Expanding Horizons on page 14. That's titled Cider's Little Brother. This article is about tendencies to split cider and Perry to different categories. And then we have about ingredients, and this is written by our friend Maxim Breckett, who's a patron of Cider Chat, a fantastic Russian cider maker. And he is talking about, for those who decided to grow cider apples, we will tell where should be the starting point, how to pick the land for the orchard, and what seedlings need to be bought. So that's a good info. Remember that this country is, it's kind of new to them making juice into cider. They have apples, but they haven't really been focusing on cider from what they told me. So we continue on with another article about ingredients, Russian types of cider apple trees. Isn't that cool? Just what I was talking about. What does the juice composition depend on? How to find the right apple trees for cider? Let's answer these questions in the review of Russian types of cider apples. Oh man. I'm going to be going through this whole thing with my Google Translate so I could kind of read it myself, but that's for another time. Then they have a section on technology. It's talking about enzyme agents affect the quality of traditional cider. So let's see. It says here, the processing of apple pulp with enzyme agents could give a lot of advantages, but research results published in this article show that this kind of processing potentially could extract a high dosage of substances that are dangerous for human health. All right. Yeah, getting into it. And then they have a section on equipment. So tanks with veritable volume. So they're talking about those stainless steel tanks that are used by winemakers and now cider makers. And then they also have another article on cement spheres, right? So cider makers who are using cement eggs or concrete balls. There's a section on home cider making, one on interpreting the laws, and then they have the featured guest. And then there's a conversation talking about our friend Mali Cider out of Italy. So that's really exciting. The difference between French and Italian cider making. That's going to be fun to read. And then cider places. And then the market. So they're talking about cider territory. Is cider closer to wine or is it an independent drink? We asked this question to the participants of the cider market from CIS and Russia. I'm not sure what CIS is. And that's written by my friend Olga Efremova. She and her husband, Mikhail, have their own cidery. They are trained sommeliers, and she's just wonderful. I adore her. Then they go into alternate media, and that's on Cider Chat. And then it continues with events. Talking about different events. But let's go back to alternate media, Cider Chat. They titled this article, A Touch of Experience. Oh, that's quite nice. And it continues with the story about one of the most famous talk projects on English dedicated to cider. All right. Okay. Well, that says let's go to page 88. So I'm going to do that and go through this page here. I mean, the magazine, the feel of it is just beautiful. It just gives it such high quality. Let's see the photos. I'm seeing people I know in here. I see one pretty famous English cider maker and a French seller. Oh, good stuff. Okay, I'm not going to get lost here. Let's go back to page 88, and we open it up, and holy smokes, what a photo. My goodness. Okay, so those of you who are on the Totally Cider tour with me to Normandy, France in 2018, there is that unbelievably beautiful photo of all of us in front of Mount Saint Michel. This is their feature photo for this piece on Cider Chat, and it's gorgeous. Wow, I'm kind of floored here. What a beautiful, beautiful photo. And then we go into a couple pages here before I read the article. There are photos of different guests from Cider Chat. So we have Chuck Shelton, it's the first person up there. So Chuck from Albemarle Cider Works. And Bart from Poland, he is there, a photo of us when we were in Spain. And Anzu Fernandez, he is like the delegate for La Sidra in Asturias. And there's a photo there of Randall Graham opening up a bottle of Cormet from Eric Bordelais that Randall and I drank. I think that was last year we were drinking that bottle. I'm going to turn another page here. Now we're on page 92. This is a pretty big article. Big photo with Etienne Dupont. And again, not just Etienne, but the whole group from that 2018 Totally Cider tour to Normandy. That was such a special, special trip to Normandy, France. And this is an outstanding photo. I'm so proud of this particular group that I was with because we were with Etienne at a very tender time. And they really all excelled. We were treated like family and incredible connections made. On the next page is Eric Bordelais dinner. Eric's holding a bottle of his, I think it's Argolet, I can't tell, and some of his tasty dessert there, classic Eric Bordelais. And then we have Anne-Marie Thornton. If you know Anne-Marie, she's from, oh my God, I'm so excited I can't even think of it. It's James Creek Cider House. And what state are you in? I'm trying to remember, Anne-Marie. I'm kind of going blank right now. Is it North Carolina? I think it is. I'll make sure I get that right. Anyways, those are all the photos. Oh, there's more. Okay, we go to page 94, and we see Jennifer Dean. That she's from County Cider. That's up in Ontario, one of the first cideries in Canada. A beautiful photo of her behind the taps. And then we have my beloved Carol B. Hillman from New Salem Preserves holding one of her bottles of cider, looking good. And then we do have a Russian cider maker here, and that's Alex Inova. He has his own cidery called Rebel Cider Company. And then the final photo, a big classic one that I really love, is with myself and Mike Johnson and Albert Johnson. It was taken at the Ross Cider Fest in 2019, and I'm wearing the Cider Equals Fun t-shirt, and those farmers, God, you love them. All right, I think that's it. No more pages to turn, and let me take a little breather here, and then we'll open up the article. Does that sound good, Mr. Quince?
Maybe you better get a drink of water, Rhea.
That sounds like a good idea, but I think I'd rather have a glass of cider.
Or Perry. Perry would work, too. They could have a featured issue on Perry Pears.
You know, Perry, they are talking about Perry. It's like one of the first articles in this, and why they kind of separated, or should you separate it. So Perry is mentioned, just so you know, Mr. Perry Pear.
Indeed. Duly noted.
You're such a good sport, Perry Pear. All right, let's get into it.
Let's do it.
I have to say I'm a little bit nervous, and that's a little uncanny for me because I'm just here with the Talking Palms in the Cider House. So I'm thinking, Mr. Quince, how about if we have like a little bit of background music? Because, you know, I've been talking about myself and it feels a little awkward. Oh, it's a little too dark.
How about this?
Not quite. I don't think so.
Take three.
You know, I think that'll work, Mr. Quince. Okay, let's roll.
Quiet on the set.
Ready to begin rolling the tape? Counting 1, 2, 3.
I am a fan of quality libations and come from a family that upholds a tradition to starting each holiday gathering with a raised glass and a toast. As a child, I was taught that it was an honor to drink with my grandfathers and not one that they nor I abused or took for granted. These same grandfathers were at one time known as bootleggers during Prohibition, and my paternal grandfather always had a barrel of cider at his farm. The apple tree in his backyard had 5 different varieties grafted onto that one tree, and the children were taught not to climb its majestic branches. We knew at an early age that it provided food and drink to our family, and as such was revered. My own parents also did a bit of fermenting. I first learned how to make beer and then began to ferment grapes and apples. My novice background in fermenting was just enough to land me a fun side gig as a craft beer writer in 2003. I've been writing a bi-monthly column and an occasional feature for all these years later for that same craft beer newspaper called Yankee Brew News. For many years, I was one of the few women beer writers in the U.S. who was also actively making cider, teaching cider making courses, and had a platform to write about both beer and cider. At first, the editors of Yankee Brew News were reluctant to publish news on cider. But eventually, they let me plug in articles during each apple harvest season. In 2013, I knew cider was finally getting a wider audience. That same year, while judging at the annual Great International Beer Competition in Rhode Island, we had an uptick in the number of ciders being entered into the competition. The next year, the number of entries tripled, and even more notable, a commercial cider maker flew across the country from California to represent his brand. Cider sales in the U.S. was growing exponentially during this time. Also in 2014, while at that same competition that highlighted beer, everyone wanted to talk to me about cider. They knew via my writings that I was regularly teaching a how to make cider course at a local cider festival. That festival, called Cider Days, is now the longest running and most celebrated cider event in the U.S. and takes place on the first weekend of November. Being part of Cider Days when it first started back in 1994 allowed me to meet the early cider pioneers in the U.S. before the current modern-day cider movement we see today. Professionally during all this time, I was quite busy working as the CEO and founder of an international consulting firm focused on conflict management. During my travels, I would always set aside time to visit a cider maker, orchard, and breweries. Blame it on fate that at that same time the cider market was growing, I was looking at scaling back my consulting work. I already had a weekly podcast on my specialty in managing violent situations, so I decided why not create a second podcast solely on cider. The decision was easy to make due to the growing interest of cider in the U.S. and the uncanny number of cider experts popping up on the internet. I launched the first episode of Cider Chat in the fall of 2015, and it is now in its 6th season with nearly 300 episodes. All the episodes are archived and free to download via the Cider Chat website and all the podcast app directories such as Apple Podcasts and Spotify. I post each Wednesday and feature interviews with makers, cider enthusiasts, and people in the cider industry worldwide. Episodes are between 30 minutes to 1 hour in length and usually begin with news from out and about in Ciderville. The listeners of Cider Chat are a very engaged audience, so I often am reading letters sent to me. For each episode, I select a specific theme to discuss and also have series on topics such as the 2020 four-part series with Russian cider makers. There are currently 5 episodes featuring Russian makers, which is quite exciting as this is such a new category for the country, and the cider I have tasted thus far is quite impressive. Alexander Inova of Rebel Apple based in Moscow is showcasing the apple variety known as Antonovka in his cider called Bride. It is a wonderful aromatic cider that is very fruit forward with a touch of tannin. I had Alex on episode 216. In February 2020, I was set to meet Russian cider maker Maxim Breckett. He, along with a group of Russian cider makers, were attending Cider Expo in Normandy, France. So we set up an interview. I was honestly expecting a group of men, but when Maxim walked through the door with three women who were all making cider, I was floored. Their passion and joy for cider was contagious. I titled part one of the four-part series, The Russian Cider Party Starts Now. Alina Lokkeba, who, via her I Love Cider brand, is helping to boost Russian cider. Olga Efremova and her cider-making husband, Mika Efremova, are both sommeliers, and their brand, OMG, shows their level of skill honed from the wine world. I love following Olga's Instagram posts because her ability to describe cider is heavenly. Real Brew's own editor, Elena Tukana, made me do a mental double take when I realized not only is she owner and head brewmeister at Nightberg Brewery in St. Petersburg, but she is also already winning awards with her barrel-aged cider, the 2017 Force of Gravity. Maxim's own bottle-conditioned cider is exquisite. I can't wait to see what all these and many more Russian makers have to offer moving forward. People listen to Cider Chat via the website, podcast directory apps, and at the Cider Chat YouTube channel. The goal for this podcast is to be everywhere. Thus, I also have social media accounts on Twitter at Cider Chat, Instagram at Cider Chat Ciderville, a Cider Chat Facebook page, and even a TikTok page at Cider Chat. In 2018, I launched Totally Cider Tours and have since led cider tours both in Europe and in the U.S. I started this side business because so many listeners wanted to visit the cider makers that I've interviewed. Tour guiding comes naturally to me due to my organizational and facilitation skills and my extensive work as a wilderness guide. Early on, and for some time, I paid out of pocket to produce the podcast. It is still a one-person show with me both producing and hosting, but I am slowly extending my reach and looking at hiring a virtual assistant as the podcast audience continues to grow. Cider Chat is also partially supported by patrons and sponsors. I do take fam trips, which are paid press tours to help promote cider in a particular region of the world. My goal is to showcase a local terroir and to celebrate the people, local foods, and sites. I have interviews featuring the following areas in the world: Asturias, Australia, Canada, the Canary Islands, Catalonia, Chile, Denmark, Estonia, France, Germany, Ireland, Japan, Kazakhstan, Luxembourg, Netherlands, New Zealand, Poland, Portugal, Russia, Sweden, Tasmania, Ukraine, United Kingdom, and the United States, nearly every state there. I don't expect guests to reveal their secret recipe for making cider. There is no secret. It is pretty straightforward and is more a matter of skill, which takes time, and the right kind of apples. What I do look for from each guest is their own story and what inspires them to make cider. This often leads us to a much broader history that entails family, food, and local culture and customs. Here are just a few of the people I have interviewed on Cider Chat and their simple quotes that have stood out for me and have inspired listeners around the world. Let's start in a region well known to have the oldest recorded references to cider and head to Asturias and its coastal city of Gijón. It is estimated that the average yearly intake of sidra here is 65 liters per every man, woman, and child. This region of Spain has a cider celebration nearly every weekend of the year, and also hosts the International Hall of Gala Apples in the fall, which I attended in 2017. There are 2,500 Asturian-only varieties of cider apples, with 200 varieties considered endemic to only Asturias. Every brand of natural sidra has the minimum of 6 varieties of apples in the blend. Asturias makers produce 100 million liters of cider per year, and there are even cider pour competitions. The long pour, or the colleen, where the cider is poured from at least a meter from the bottle to the glass, is done to release carbonic gases in the sidra. The glass is held on a slight angle to catch the pour, with only about an eighth of a cup, or 29 milliliters, poured into each glass. The result is a frothy amount of cider, which is meant to be drunk right away, much like a shot of vodka. One does not sniff and swirl sidra, it should be noted. Nice, Mr. Quince. While in Gijón to attend a cider competition, I interviewed Anzu Fernandez of La Sidra magazine. Anzu, it should be noted, speaks 15 languages and is a medical doctor. He is also what I call cider bold, with his unapologetic views of his region's quality of cider, saying, "Asturians are quite expert in cider. You wouldn't fool anyone with a low quality cider." Anzu's interview can be heard in episode 62. Skipping back to the U.S., in 2015, I was able to meet and interview Randall Graham while visiting my own family in Santa Cruz, California. I have since posted 2 episodes with him, the first in 2016 in episode 12, and the second in 2019 in episode 188. Randall is a recipient of multiple James Beard Awards and is a prolific writer with a whimsical touch. He is also known in the wine world as the Rhone Ranger, and turned the category upside down when he introduced screw caps to high-end bottles of wine. Recently, he sold his label Bonnie Doon Vineyards in California to work on his new estate vineyard, Papalachum, which is south of where he started his innovative winemaking 36 years ago. His 2013 Query, a blend of quince, apples, and pears, is part of the reason why I first sought him out for an interview. He approaches cider making from a winemaker's view and says, "What I am doing with grapes, one might want to consider doing with apples." Coming from one of the premier winemakers in the U.S. today, I view the simple statement as a call to action. John Bunker resides on the east coast of the U.S. in the state of Maine and is a renowned apple detective. He just published his newest book, Apples and the Art of Detection, in 2019. John is often asked to identify trees abandoned at old homesteads and as such has been able to elevate awareness around lost apple varieties. John says, "With the work that I do around heritage apples, what I'm looking for is a variety that maybe someone introduced 100 years ago, or 200 years ago, or even 300 years ago." John Bunker is looking at the long run that cider has had and the long future ahead. He also inspired a new generation of apple detectives. Tom Oliver is a celebrated maker from Herefordshire, who is well known for both his ciders and perry, and many collaborations with other cider makers and brewers. Tom has been featured on episodes 29, when he talks about his coveted hop cider, and episode 105, on making perry. Says Tom, "I'm a big fan of the concept of a family of cider makers. We may all be making cider in different ways, different business models, but what we do need to do is to get on with each other." Considering that cider is still a small niche in a huge world of drinks, this advice is spot on for cider makers worldwide.
Aww. That is very good advice from Tom Oliver.
I agree, Perry Pear. And for this article for Real Brew, they asked me to kind of pinpoint about 20 different makers. So I did the best I could, and we have a couple more to go through. So shall we keep on reading?
Well, since you're asking, Rhea, I think you should continue reading this article.
Okay, Perry, I will. Because, you know, I mean, only 20 out of 300, that was pretty hard to do, and I don't want anybody to feel left out.
Do it, Rhea.
Okay, Mr. Quince, we're going to keep on rolling.
Roger that.
Excellent, because these are some really cool people up ahead. It goes on with, in episode 35, Daniel von Schreiner of New York City shares how she donates a portion of her ciders to charitable causes in New York City. And she says, we give a little part of the Big Apple to anyone who drinks it. That's drinks it, our ciders. She is putting the big back into New York City's Apple Love with so much of her charitable contributions, and as such is an inspiration to all. I recorded episode 44 with Sebastian Lusader, who lives on a mountaintop in the state of Vermont. He is both licensed to make cider and to distill. I'm a big fan of his Palme de Vie, an organic apple brandy. The cidery is named Flag Hill Farm and is operated fully off the grid, being supported by solar panels. It is here that he has been producing cider for nearly 30 years, making Flag Hill Farm one of the oldest cideries in the U.S. As such, he has a long view of cider over time and says, back then, people had no idea what cider was or that it even had alcohol in it. Because of the confusion over sweet cider, which is fresh pressed apple juice, we decided to spell our product with A-Y. And so it is spelled as cider with a Y to differentiate it from other products. On a good year, we make 4,000 gallons of cider because we only want to use apples that we have grown. Further to the south, in the state of Virginia, the Shelton family run Albemarle Cider Works and Vintage Virginia Apples. I featured Chuck Shelton, who is a head cider maker, on episode 56 and 254. At most every cider event, you will see Chuck with a bag of bottles, and if you are lucky, he will slip one out and pour you a sip. The cidery makes some of the finest single varietal ciders and blends in the U.S. I love how Chuck sums up cider making by saying, cider happens. If you squeeze juice out of an apple and put it in a jar, as long as you manage the vinegar, bacteria, you're going to make cider, and it's going to make itself. So true. My journey in cider has taken me to France on a number of occasions. When I reached out to the French Interprofessional Association of Cider-Based Control Appellations, called IDAC, for recommendations, they immediately directed me to Agathe Letellier. I headed to Normandy to interview cider producers and to plan a cider tour. When I arrived to her seaside orchard, I saw giant photos of happy cows posted out in her orchard. I knew I was in the right place. Agathe has done a wonderful job making her cidery tourist-friendly. She and I shared a very long belly laugh that you could hear on episode 49, when I told her that American cider makers sometimes add coffee to their cider. Her label is Manoir d'April and is located by the scenic harbor town of Honfleur. She is the current spokesperson for Calvados in Normandy. Agathe sums up what takes place in the barrel of Calvados by saying, quote, we have an evolution in the bottle, unquote. I am forever thankful that I had the opportunity to interview Jérôme Dupont of Domaine Dupont for episode 98 at the Normandy Estate. He was an innovative cider maker and helped to move Norman ciders out into the world market. Without a doubt, he was a leading figure in promoting Calvados. He is the great-grandson of Jules Dupont, who bought Domaine Dupont in Pays d'Auge with Calvados in 1887, helping to move his cattle-raising family into the spirits industry. Today, his father, Etienne Dupont, runs the estate. Jerome said, quote, you don't master wild yeasts. You get to know them and get to anticipate a little bit of what they will do. But you will need certainly time and attention. It is much simpler to pitch selected yeasts, but the complexity of the cider is due to the apple varieties and the wild yeast. unquote. In 2020, I recorded a Calvados tasting with Jerome's father, Etienne, who is featured in episode 265. Being able to taste cider with such a master crafter was undoubtedly a highlight of my career. He describes the act of tasting Calvados by saying, quote, "You put it in your mouth, you keep it, the Calvados that is, in your mouth, and the aroma goes up," unquote. Thanks to an introduction by Randall Graham, I was able to meet French maker Eric Bordelais. He is considered an elusive maker whose cider and perry is often touted as some of the best in the world. He had worked many years as one of the top sommeliers in Paris before heading back to his family's domain in Normandy. He was encouraged by his late friend Didier Dagenot, who was a winemaker and well known for his Sauvignon Blanc, to become a cider maker. That advice was spot on, and today over 75% of Eric's product is exported to sites outside of France. On episode 57, he says, quote, "The only school for me is taste, taste, taste," unquote, which shows how he views cider making to being like a chef in a kitchen. In episode 58, he discusses why he prefers to blend apples before pressing and does not do single varietal ciders. Quote, "It is my opinion of cider to have more balance is to blend," unquote. The cider tradition in Poland dates back to the 16th century, but is only recently gearing up once again. My guest, Bartosz Galacka, or as we lovingly call him, Bart, of Poland, is in episode 64, and he says, quote, "The main point is to try, to learn, and enjoy," unquote. Considering that the country grows a lot of apples, but is now only just beginning to celebrate the fermented juice in the glass, makes this country one to put on the cider watch list. Canadian cider making, like the U.S., was thrown out of whack due to prohibition. One of the key influencers of cider is County Cider, based in Prince Edward County in the Canadian province of Ontario, that began selling cider in 1996. This cidery was launched by Grant Howes, a formidable man considered the grandfather of cider in Ontario. In 2000, Jennifer Dean, who had studied winemaking, joined up with County Cider. Sadly, her husband Grant unexpectedly passed away in January of 2017. Their tasting room has a lovely view out onto Lake Ontario, and you could see the trees close by that they keep the fruit on deep into the winter so to make ice cider. Growing their own fruit for cider is key, with Jennifer saying, quote, "It is a shame that cideries are not growing their own apples. You need to have a sense of what you are growing in order to make good cider," unquote. You can listen to Jennifer's interview in episode 137. Prince Edward County in Ontario has seen an uptick of cider makers, and one person in particular has been a regular guest on Cider Chat with over 10 episodes. His name is Ryan Monkman of Fieldbird Cider. He has extensive experience in the wine industry and brings this talent to his cider making. Ryan specializes in barrel aging cider. He has taught many listeners of Cider Chat via episode 132, the technique known as batonnage, which is stirring in the lees rather than racking them off the cider. Ryan encourages us all to, quote, "use all your senses in the cellar," unquote. In 2020, and then again this year, 2021, I published two separate Ask Ryan series. The first was called the Quarantine Quad Series and covered topics sent in by listeners on subjects such as American versus French oak for barrels and maderization, which is when barrels are intentionally left out to be cooked by the heat and sun. The result is a high alcohol cider that is considered maderized. In part 4 of this series on episode 224, Ryan explained how to manage floor, or what is also commonly called film yeast, which can look like an oil slick on top of cider during conditioning. Though quite common, it can be scary the first time you see floor, and it happens to both wine and cider. Ryan says, quote, film yeast will consume oxygen, which can be a good thing. But if it goes on for more than a couple weeks, you will lose aromatics. Do look out for Acetobacter. That is a form of film yeast and is more bubbly than other flour because it will eventually form vinegar. Unquote. Back in the southern state of North Carolina, cider-making husband and wife team David and Anne-Marie Thornton are showcasing a blend of their apples and local fruit in their Stargazer series. The Prowling Peach is part of this series and is a barrel-aged cider with peach juice. And the James Creek Heritage Ciders showcase their regional apples and are bottled in 750-milliliter glass presentations. The terroir of southern apple varieties is uniquely their own, says David, quote, "In the South, we are just starting to rediscover our cider heritage," unquote. Listen to the Thorntons share their passion for ciders in episode 179, titled Southern Apples. The Ross Cider Fest is a three-day festival that takes place to the west of London and has been hosted by the Johnson family for 25 years. Mike Johnson's son, Martin, manages the magnificent Yew Tree Pub, and son Albert works alongside Mike and cider maker John Edwards, producing upwards to 90 ciders, many of which have one or two choice apples and some very fine single varietal ciders and perries. I was able to camp out in the orchard in 2019, along with many other people who attended the Cider Fest. I interviewed Mike and Albert in episode 194. I admire all these men for their love of cider, their quality product, and their honest and no-nonsense view on cider. Says Mike, quote, "It depends why you are into cider making. If you just want to make something sweet and fuzzy and sell as much as possible, that's a different argument. Maybe. But if you are really interested in apples, you have to get to know them. And it is fun." I love that, Mike. John Edwards, whose full name is John Michael Leslie Edwards, is also known as John the Cider Maker. In addition to helping the Johnson family, he also has his own cider label called Fly Bee Night. He says, quote, "The most important thing is to eliminate hurry. With cider making, you have to be patient," unquote. Eliminating hurry is likely one of the most poetic ways to describe cider making that I have heard of to date. Besides excellent cider, his labels are also poetic and to the point, reading, quote, "Look close into the label and you will see words of wisdom, fun, and mischievous glee. There are no surprises, just a straight-up fact. This cider contains 0% shit." You could hear John's story in episode 192. In episode 198, I had the honor of interviewing Cornell University pomologist Gregory M. Peck. He has been a professor of pomology at Cornell University since 2015 and is helping to usher in the pomologists of the future. Needless to say, he has a wide view on cider, both in the U.S. and internationally, which is why when he says, quote, "The cider industry is going to grow very rapidly," unquote, I listen. There are a number of cideries in what is known as the Finger Lake region of New York State. I did a fam tour of this area and was impressed by the people and their products. When I interviewed Garrett Miller of Finger Lake Cider House and asked why he became a farmer and then a cider maker, his reply was straightforward and familiar. He said, quote, "It looked like a real enjoyable way to spend a life," unquote. After spending the afternoon at this booming cider house that is complete with an on-site restaurant and a large farm called the Good Life Farm, there is no doubt that Garrett's words ring true. I interviewed him in episode 203. Back in my home state of Massachusetts is what many call an orchard museum. This orchard is located at New Salem Cider and has been cared for by the same pruner for the past 30 years. The orchard has a bonsai sensibility with the apple tree's water sprouts turned into apple pretzels and many hundred-year-old trees everywhere. The gentlewoman farmer who brought this colonial-era farm back to life nearly 50 years ago is Carol B. Hillman. She is 90 plus years young and has hosted a harvest fest for the past 20 years at her cider mill. I interviewed Carol in episode 192 titled Cider Revitalizes a 1750 Colonial Orchard. In this episode, Carol told the story of how she chased a hunter out of her apple tree and brought back this colonial homestead. Her original sights were on the house, but then she turned her sights on the abandoned orchard to bring it back to full glory, saying, quote, "Without apple trees, we are nothing," unquote. And thanks to the apple trees, we have something that is essentially a time capsule of a fall harvest season. Cider may be bubbly or still, and sometimes a mix of apples or one specific variety. Some makers add other fruit or spices to their cider, but one thing is certain. We all love cider. Hey, thanks, Med Lars. I really appreciate all that background music there, Mr. Quince, and of course, Perry Pear, who kept on pouring a little bit of cider, and then I noticed it changed to Perry.
But of course.
Again, to those out there in Ciderville, those were my beloved Talking Palms, and this article was released in the summer issue of A Real Brew magazine out of Russia. You're going to be able to find the complete article, some of the photos from the actual magazine itself, and of course, what I just read here. So if you heard one of these, you know, cider makers talking, a certain quote that really inspired you to recheck out an episode, please do. You'll be able to find it linked right in, again, in the show notes to this here episode, which is number 285, counting up to episode 300. Welcome to our newest patrons of this here podcast. That would be Small Acres Cider in Australia. And I have a little email that I'll be following up from Nick at Small Acres Cider. Just want to say right now in the Southern Hemisphere, it's cold. You know, it's like wintertime there, which is kind of like a twist, a little bit of twist in my head. But I could wrap around my brain around that. So I just want to wish you well out there in Australia. Thank you to everybody at Small Acre Cider. It looks like really premium cider, and we're going to be hearing a little bit more about what they're doing there. And also a big tip of the glass to the American Cider Association, which has just joined the Cider Going Up campaign at ciderchat.com. Now, the American Cider Association is a national association here in the U.S., which is really helping to move the cider agenda forward, both in the legislature and in each and every state, one way or the other. You know, it is a go-to organization. They lead the national trade conference called CiderCon. Check them out at ciderassociation.org. And if you like the American Cider Association and Small Acres Cider in Australia, feel that you've gotten some value from Cider Chat, please consider being a patron or donating. You can find a donate button at ciderchat.com, and you'll also find a link to the Cider Chat Patreon page. Patreon is spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N, and every little bit helps to get this podcast rolling. As you heard me mention earlier, I am trying to get a VA, a virtual assistant, on board to help me manage this podcast, which is a little unwieldy in some ways. You know, people are sending me emails and I can barely get to it because it's like kind of me and my own. And well, you know, except the Talking Palms.
We understand, Rhea.
Thank you, Mr. Quince. I'm sure you do. You know, it's a lot. They got a lot going on. They're dealing with the orchard. I'm dealing with Cider Chat, getting it out. You know, it all helps each other. And I really hope that you listening right now know my passion for this amazing drink, but all the extra parts and the wheels that make it kind of turning for all of us. You know, the people that work in the industry, the different sectors, whether it's the folks who are pouring at the bar or the people who are making the apple baskets to like be able to pick apples, you know, it's just absolutely amazing. And I like to keep on staying on the air to promote it. So do consider becoming a patron today. Again, that's at the Cider Chat Patreon page. All that you can find at ciderchat.com. This episode 285 is an end for our focus on who is cider media today in the U.S. and also a little taste of the international touch. I think you got what Cider Chat is doing. It's a really critical point in our time of history. I can't say it enough to really support cider media so that folks like Cider Culture, Cider Scene, and Cider Craft Magazine can keep on doing the work that they're doing. And of course, as I said, Cider Chat. Check it all out. There's again links to all those episodes at ciderchat.com. Now we're slowly rolling out of August. Next week I'll be traveling, so I cannot promise you that there's going to be an episode, and I could hear you all going, what? But I have some kick butt episodes coming out. I got the whole bevy of recordings from my recent tour through New York and Pennsylvania with amazing cider makers, and I also have another one coming out of Ireland. And I don't want to leave that too much out of the hat yet, I guess I should say. But it is a doozy. And I think I'm going to be rolling with that one next. So stay posted. Stay well. I will be on social media and do what I can to get an episode out to you. But it may be in 2 weeks' time. Aww. Meanwhile, I hope if you're in the Southern Hemisphere, well, you're enjoying the slowly the end of the winter, maybe coming into spring. And for those of us up in the Northern Hemisphere, man, August is the best, right? It is the best. Finally, we're out of the heat in New England. The apples are just everywhere. The trees are so laden with fruit here. I don't even know what to say. It's beautiful. Apples on the road everywhere. And it's just a nice time of the year. And so with that, I'm going to bid you farewell. This is Rhea Windcaller. Signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
We like cider. We like palms. We love orchards and having fun. There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh, yes, there is. There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet. We like cider. We like palms. We like orchards. Having some fun.
There is a reason. There is a reason why we do it like this. Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh, yeah.
We like cider.
Oh, yes, we do.
We like palms.
Oh, yes, we do.
We love orchards. Having some fun.
There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum. Ba-da-da-dum.
We like walking down the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh, yeah.
We like cider.
Ba-da-da-dum.
We like palms.
Oh, yes, we do.
We like orchards. Having some fun.
Yeehaw!